Visit with Cora Gamble, March 26, 2001. Participants besides Cora are Nancy Kuhn, Ruth, and Al George. We're meeting at the George residence, 512 Herning Road, Fairbanks, Alaska.
And who they were? Louis Bourdon took these three pieces and dropped this one.
Okay, the George Fry. We can mark this map, because this is one that I'm choosing to work on. So, he dropped which one?
This one.
Okay, so he kept...
those three pieces.
And that was Louis Bourdon. Mm-hmm. Pen isn't worth much.
And Louis then, he died in his... his sister inherited it, and she sold it to the people that have it now.
I'm trying to remember who I know. A couple up there.
Anyway. Okay, and
this
so
piece here was homesteaded these three sections, mm-hmm. and this one. No, here I go. This DeLong's piece.
Right.
Here. One, two, three, four. Somehow you curled around us.
Well, so this map isn't 100% accurate.
This, these two pieces and these two pieces is what he took.
Okay.
A fellow from, a kid out of the military, took this one. It was turned back and he took mm-hmm. this here. And then we took these three. And then we dropped this one and took one right here.
Right in here,
yeah.
Would that be?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
then ours went here.
This whole...
We had three sections right here, or 3/4.
Oh, I see. Okay, so mm-hmm. like...
And then one more,
two,
one into here.
Okay, so you had an irregular, you had a T-shaped...
Yeah, T-shaped.
Piece. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Then my cousin homesteaded this, and then Al Smith took it over. He
oh,
left, and then
okay.
Al Smith took it
yeah.
over quite a few, several years.
Trying to remember how to spell that.
S-Z-M-Y-D.
S-Z, oh, that looks right.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, and so he had these three?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll be sure I get those.
Actually, I think he's got one up here, too.
In the bottom?
I think he took...
Right in here?
Yes. Well, he's got the one next to... It's got to be this one here because he has the creek is in his.
Right.
And that creek, see, it runs...
Well, Ruby Creek.
That creek
comes
runs...
Down.
Actually, it runs across... It's closer into the middle
mm-hmm.
of this 40-acre piece right here. And it runs up this way.
That's this creek here?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I don't think they were being terribly... accurate about that sort of thing.
Yeah, it runs across this 40-acre piece and up like this.
Okay.
And then this drainage right here,
mm-hmm.
this Rex Creek, it cuts like this, and this one then drains this way. This is the ridge right
yeah.
here.
Yeah, it would have to be.
And then Smith's brother, Ray Smith, took this piece here.
Okay, rolled it along.
And
the whole strip?
No, he only took half, and then this guy that bought this piece, or not that, this is, he has a, what's his name? Oh my goodness, my mind's going to fail me today.
Well, let me think of it. It'll come back to you. Watch, have a drink of coffee while you're, before it gets cold. Can I put your purse over there?
Mm-hmm.
We can move that map out a little.
Lammers.
Oh,
Mr. Lammers. Yeah,
right.
Greg Lammers has this piece.
Oh, okay.
Keith Foster,
that whole 360?
Yeah, whole 40. This whole 160 right here.
Okay, 160 there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Lammers.
You are about to get put out on the porch.
You are
a
sight on this.
Well, if you when you go back here like this, the road cuts right through that piece right there.
All right.
And the Estro site is right on the edge of
right
the creek.
Right on the edge of
in that.
Okay.
These 2 40-acre pieces.
Oh,
here.
Okay, so we just mark those in.
Yeah. Then this piece, let me see here. This was Pete Aiken's piece. This piece here, my sister homesteaded.
No, was that her name?
No, her name was Upton.
Okay, did he relinquish then, or she
no,
had it first?
No, she just sold it. This guy relinquished, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And they homesteaded
okay.
then.
And her name was Upton? Border around that, so we know.
His, it was only the 100, this piece right here. Just
not the way they show it.
Yeah, this piece is still open, actually. This either the university or the state owns this piece.
Okay, let's see.
The university, the state owns this piece here.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure. Still. And then let's see. Okay. Then this next piece is owned by the state, too. This piece. And then this piece here, my brother, or my sister, other sister, homesteaded.
Okay. How much? An 80 or?
They had, they had these three pieces in this piece.
Oh, okay. So an L shaped.
Yeah. And the Flying Family, what's their name? They're now real estate, too. They have some real estate now. It'll come to me.
Oh,
anyway,
what was your sister?
Parker.
Parker?
Parker.
Okay.
George Parker. And then they sold it to somebody and somebody else.
Well,
and now Newman owns it. Right
oh,
now.
Okay. That's
Gary Newman owns
right.
this two pieces
okay.
right here. And this is owned by, like I said, they, Boughton, a bar, what's the flyers? They had a, the family that has the flying out of Bochner's.
Oh,
it's owned by Bochner's.
Okay. Well, I don't think I,
last I heard
can keep up with all of that. But it's interesting to know. But right now, I think I am most interested in the people who came out early and stayed. Because they're the ones that know what things were like early on. And it's the local history I'm interested in. Colleen Herning, who lives down here in our cabin, the oldest of Don's kids, is working on this too. But her interest, of course, is more family.
Sure.
Which makes sense. And so she wasn't available today, isn't going to be for a while. Here comes Nancy.
Well, just the people that, of course, the Aiken family is all gone now. And Loud is still here. Dick Loud is. Young Dick Loud is still here.
Is it Dick or is it the Tim? I thought somebody told me Dick's in the new house above the road there.
Behind the horse barn.
Okay.
Yeah, he mines out someplace, but he's still here. I see him occasionally.
Huh. Well, somebody told me it was Tim, and I don't know where Tim is then. Okay.
And of course, Henry's still here. Art and Stell Yoder both are dead. They lived in Anchorage until Art died about 4 years ago, and Stell died about 9 years ago.
Did you know anything about this Dr. Fitz?
Oh, yeah. He was a preacher that had bought this place here. Him and Bert Stemple kind of farmed together for a while, and then they quit. And Bert lives in Arkansas.
Oh, yeah, I was aware of that. And you notice this is Kay Stemple, and then here's Bert up here. So they had two pieces.
This is his wife.
Yeah, they had two pieces apparently not connected.
Yeah. And then Bert bought, actually, Fitz Yeah. No, Bert bought this piece, I think.
Oh, okay. This RG, does that belong to Fitz?
Well, it did. He farmed it.
The initials. Were those his initials, do you know?
I think it might have been.
Because it looks like he
that.
Had this
yeah,
piece
he
here
owned
in L-shape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he owned this right here.
Right.
And Bert's wife owned this,
right.
And Bert
and
owned this.
Had that up there. Oh, there
yeah.
She is.
Hi there.
Hello. We couldn't wait.
And let's see.
Okay.
Who else is out here still?
Well, the various hornings. We've talked to Maddie and
the
Bernie Rainier?
Yeah, his daughter still lives on the place.
Right.
There.
Oh, I didn't know she lived on the place. That's,
yeah, she lives right there, but you know where the road is, that house that's right there on the road? She married these people's boys.
Oh,
son.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Schmidt.
Yeah, she lives in that house. It's just
that new one.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
First one.
We watched it.
Yeah.
Without knowing whose it was.
Yeah, her last name is Smith.
Oh, what do you know? Well, in the first place, do you have any idea who Steel Creek was named for?
No, it was already named when I come up here, so. I think it was, from what I've heard, it was named after the creek was out here, Steel Creek itself.
Yeah, so who was Steel Creek itself named for is the question.
Well, the Steel Creek is right here.
Yeah, right. But it had, there's some reason they called it Steel.
Well, see, the road took off like this here and come like this here and ended out here at Ackerman's.
Right.
That was the end of the road right there. And
well,
it was, from here, it was just a trail.
Right.
But that's why they called it Steel Creek, because of this, from what I understood.
But well, incidentally, when did you come up?
1950, March of 53.
53,
okay.
And didn't you say you were young woman at the time?
20. Yeah,
20.
Yeah, with three little kids.
Where'd you start from?
California.
What piece of California?
Oh, Fresno.
Fresno, yeah. California. Yeah. Are you raised from Fresno?
No, I was born in Oklahoma, but we moved out when I was about 4 or 5 years old. We just, you know, got married real young, my husband and I. Just couldn't stand that area anymore. It's too crowded. So.
Isn't it amazing? It seemed like young now, but then it didn't seem. I mean, I married at 19, but wait, if you already had...
I married at 16.
You married at 16. Well, then yes. Even my mother would have thought that was young.
Yeah, we married at 16, right out of high school. Actually, we weren't even out. I was a junior, and he was a senior. And he went to San Francisco and become a sheet metal man.
Well, that's where he learned, because that was one of his trades.
Yeah.
His trade.
In San Francisco.
In San Francisco, huh?
Then we moved to Fresno.
Oh,
and, in San Francisco, I had my son.
Right.
And then we moved to Fresno, and I had my other daughter, Kathy. And then we stayed in Fresno, and I had another daughter, Kathy. And then when she was two, we moved up here. She was born in 50, so she was not.
I understand.
She wasn't quite two.
When you came on.
She was not quite three.
Wow.
Wait a minute.
I still have the original truck that we came up here.
You still have the original truck. And where do you didn't sell that one with all the other farm machinery? You know, that's older than some of that farm machinery was.
It's a 1945 Army dump truck. You know, Army flatbed truck. Yeah. I still have it. My husband turned it into a swamp buggy.
Into a swamp buggy?
Uh-huh.
Then the kids must have learned to drive.
Oh, they refused to sell it. They said, no, don't you sell that, Mom. I mean, if you look at it, you wonder, how did five people sit in the front seat of that truck and come to Alaska 3,000 miles?
You drove them.
When I get my book done, I'm going to name, the name of it is going to be, So You Think You Want a Homestead, Huh?
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Well, was your husband also? Well, yes, he had to be, because you said you were a junior and he was a senior in high school, so he must have been
6 months older than me, yeah. So I was. He had just. He hadn't turned 17. He just barely turned 17.
So in those days, did you have to get parental permission to marry? Or?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you have to still have parental permission at 16.
Yeah, you still.
So what brought you to Alaska?
My husband's always wanted to come up here. He just didn't like the rat race. He worked 40 miles from his job
See, that early it was a rat race.
Yeah. It was, he had to drive an hour to work. Mm-hmm. And so he just got sleepy and he said, this is for the birds. You know, let's go someplace where we... And we wanted to get away from family.
Sure.
Because we wanted to survive on our own. Mm-hmm. And so we just packed up our three little kids and bought a 36-foot trailer and and I walked 3/4 of the way. No, I really didn't. You get on these hills, you know, on these hills. And spin out, of course, because we've got this big truck. And so I'd jump out and block the wheels while he held the brakes. And then whenever we got the chains on, he'd put them on one side and I'd put them on the other, because I was only about 100 pounds, then about 110. And so then whenever we got the chains on, then he'd start on up the hill and I'd pick up the blocks right on, like a son of a gun, try to get a hold of him. And, you know, throw the blocks up in the back of the truck and hop on the fender and ride on up the hill.
Yeah, because he wasn't going to be stopping.
Oh, he couldn't.
Oh, no, he couldn't.
No, yeah. He was afraid that we'd spin out again.
I could see those little children in my eye looking behind saying, yeah, hurry, hurry.
Don't leave the little daughter, Kathy, she'd say, run, Mom, run. Run, Mom. So by the time I got to Alaska, I think I weighed 110 pounds.
Yeah, I can believe it. It had a lot of muscle.
It was an experience. You know?
Well, how did you find the piece of land you found?
Well, we moved. My aunt Hazel, my aunt lived. Let's see. Let me get back here.
What was her name? In case we've seen it on this.
The steel. It's on the old Steele's Highway. Where's the old Steele's
Highway?
Okay,
there.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's Steele Creek.
Steel Creek. Oh, no, that's the old
Steele's.
That's
Steele's. Okay, the Steele Creek
takes off here.
Okay. Let's see. Okay, Harry
Paniak. Oh.
My aunt homesteaded this piece, the Vetch homestead here.
Okay, and what was her name?
Blankenship.
And then did she relinquish or sold or what?
They sold. Okay. And then she homesteaded or moved out here Okay, where is Amanita Drive go off at?
Well, Amanita would be right here. Here's Frank Fratt.
Okay, Danny E. Blankenship.
Oh,
that's
okay.
My aunt.
Oh, okay. Friend.
Anyway, let's see, what was the question you asked me?
How'd you get your land? How'd you get your land?
Oh, well, when we first moved to Alaska, we parked our trailer here and I went to work for LAD Air Force Base for about 2 or 3 months, and then... till it got spring. Mm-hmm. And then in the spring, we moved it up to Pete Akins, up here on the corner of Pete Akins. And we stayed there all that summer and that winter and looked. And so we took the truck. We would take the truck down that old trail that goes to the old Pinovich mine right here.
There's an old
Pinovich mine right here on this piece of property.
Okay. How do you spell that?
Pinovich? Penevitch.
Penevitch,
I think.
My.
Yeah, you can go into the records. Anyway, the Penevitch mine is on the back corner of our property there, and parts of it on Al's. And anyway, we'd take the truck on this old trail that went to the Penevitch mine. And as we went through here, you know, it just was really pretty. Just really, really pretty. So we went ahead and went in through here. Down the old trail went way down like this and over here like this and back up again.
Yeah.
And then we moved in the spring. We cut the road. Don Hernan gave us an easement. Pete wouldn't give us an easement, but he sold us 30 feet along this side of the road.
Right.
So I own half, you know, this 30 feet
of Escrow
Road.
Mm-hmm.
And... then these people weren't there. None of these people were there. So, and these people gave me an easement.
Fries?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. These people weren't there. So the federal government gave us an easement through here. So the old trail that's in there is a RS-277, but this ours is not because we moved it from off the old trail, which went in just about right there and come like this and down around.
Right.
And then when we put it on here, it became a... These were private properties.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you know, I didn't get your... Was this yours?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I didn't get your name in there, and I'd better, or I'm going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Anyway, that's how we got this place. Like I said, we first took these two and these two, but this one was so steep in North Slope that we dropped it and took this one. And then we moved in here in the spring, in April. Promptly burnt my trailer down. We burnt the trailer the first year we were out there. My husband filled it full of coal. You know, we dug a hole in the basement and then put the trailer over the top of the basement. You know how they did in those days. And he put the coal stove down there, and he filled it full one day, and the door didn't latch tight. Ooh. And by 8 o'clock, that thing was
gone. Yeah, it would be a hot fire.
So
you lost everything you brought with you?
Everything. I mean, I had just bought the kids Christmas presents. I had just done everything. And the reason I had gone to town with him, otherwise the kids and I had been there probably, but I had to take my son into the doctor. He had tonsillitis real bad, and so I took him into the doctor. And when we got back, it was on fire.
So you dug a cellar. Did you also have a well, or how were you getting your water? You're carrying on your back from where?
from the Steel Creek. We'd get the water out of the Steel Creek then. It was clean then. It wasn't polluted. Now it's polluted.
Okay, what is polluting it?
This site back here.
Esrol.
That Esrol site. Back in the back there. They had a chemically treated plant that they dumped into the Steel Creek, so I quit using it.
And that's what forced you to
I thought that's a tooth and nail.
I bet you did. Well, aren't you afraid they'd also contaminate any of the well you would dig?
No, because the wells are too deep in through here. All the wells are 100 and something deep. And the it was chemically treated and supposed to be.
But
nonetheless, lots of people got their drinking water out of that creek. Mm-hmm. Lots of people. Because it was a fast-running little stream, fed from springs up in through here.
Mm-hmm.
This is Ruby Creek here, goes up this way. And it's fed, must be 50 springs up in there. You know, so it's good water.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know,
normal runoff water. Sure isn't anymore.
So do you remember when you went from Steel Creek hauling water to getting your own well?
About 5 years.
So only about 5 years before they polluted it.
It was 10 years before they polluted it. 15 years, actually. 60. 66 is when they built the site back there. So we used it from 1953 till 66, because that's when they built the site. And that's when they quit using it. Everybody quit using it because of that. Because it was... Because I made them for a long time post a sign down here that it was, you know, had... treated water going into it.
Right now that it still runs in the winter time, doesn't it?
Oh yeah,
lots of times we have.
It's a frames. It's not. You know, like a lot of these places are runoffs from snow, and runoffs from rain and runoffs. But this is not a runoff creek. This is spring fed through here. It's spring fed up in here. Quite a few of the springs are up in this area here.
On the hillsides.
Yeah, most of the... There's a real heavy ones up in through this, in this area here, on that slope to the right. A lot of springs up in there. And it glaciers up back on our road back here, by Al's place. We have to thaw the... Keep them thawed in order to keep it from running over the top of the road. So it's a spring... This is a spring-fed creek. It's not a runoff creek.
Well, I wouldn't have known that. That's interesting. I suppose the same thing is true, perhaps, of some of these others.
I'm sure it is.
I understand, there's a spring here on Frank Fassler's place, which would feed into Hopper Creek.
Mm-hmm.
Did one of your menfolk put a faucet there, or were you just dipping out of the water?
You mean at the creek?
Yeah.
No, we just went down...
With just your buckets?
Yeah, with the 5 gallon buckets. And just fill them. I'd strain it, you know, if there was any.
Oh, yeah, there's likely to be leaves and whatnot.
Yeah, I'd strain it by dipping into the 5 gallon bucket.
Well, that must have been good fishing, too.
It was good and clean water. I don't know if there was in the, I don't know if there was ever any fish in that or not. It's not very wide back in through here. You know, up here it's a lot wider, but it's a small creek. Like I said, it's not a big creek, but it is a freshwater creek.
When you came then, was the, no, Tina Hot Springs Road wasn't in place yet off of the Steese, was
no.
it? You were still coming by way of Steel
Yeah,
Creek.
We had to come still,
here,
Steel Creek.
Here, Steel Creek.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because there's a lot of talk about
Road,
this hill.
Yeah, it didn't come through until probably 4 years after we...
Well, that's been a question that
you
no
could
one's
go back
answered
to,
yet.
Oh, yeah. You could go back to Loud's place on a trail.
Oh, okay, from here.
Yeah, there are, and there's a creek here someplace, too. This
yeah,
creek
Columbia.
Overflowed. Okay, Columbia Creek is also fed
Spring
by springs
Creek.
Over
mm-hmm.
here by at Woods's place.
Okay. So, okay, so that was there, and the military came in to their site. See,
they came in back on the back road here.
They didn't come off where it does
mm-hmm.
now.
No.
Oh, well, that makes
they
sense.
They come off back this trail here, off the back road.
By Carrington and Company, which, that's
yeah.
interesting. Carrington and Company.
Steese, I see. Yeah, they come off, you know where the graveyard is? Where's
mm-hmm.
the graveyard? Birch Hill. They come off there, onto the back, to get onto this place. See, there used to be a site right in here someplace. Let me see, where's the old site? So this is a site?
Okay. PLO is a public land order, Al says.
Okay, let's see.
Where's... Okay, John,
okay, here's another
here's,
site. This is
okay,
another site.
This is where the aircraft, mm-hmm. anti-aircraft
They used to
was.
Pick us up right straight over this, up 10,000 feet or 15,000 feet. It's where they packed to practice their bombing.
Oh.
Or target.
Their target. Mm-hmm.
And so they would come and evacuate us.
Oh.
Every, once a month. And take us over to this little site right here.
Mm-hmm.
And backwards, you know. And
yeah.
it, like I said, it was not, the road was not through.
Yeah.
It just went backwards to about here.
Yeah.
And it and
roughly Loud's.
Over the top of this creek.
Mm-hmm.
Now, see, we had to go past Loud's, there someplace. I forget now just exactly where. Or below Loud's. Maybe it was right in, this is the one we went to here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, went right below Holmes is here, right there. And
they evacuate
us. Keep us over there for 3 or 4 hours, feed us lunch, and then take us home after they were done with their bombing.
Wait a minute. Were they actually bombing or were they firing their
firing. They were firing
right.
and they were afraid that something might fall.
Yeah.
Because
okay.
it did. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, in the past.
You found some evidence
yeah.
of this?
And so rather than take chances of killing civilians, they
yeah.
move them out.
And this was in what years?
This is in from 53 to...
Cold War years.
About 57. Mm-hmm.
So at 57, they were mm-hmm. still...
Till they abandoned the site. They took us over there. Till they abandoned the
Once
site.
Once a month, huh?
The escrow, huh?
Yeah. Well, see, the only people on escrow was just... us at that time. My sister and them moved in about 59, and my other sister about 57 to 59, in that area. And so the only other people on the road was just us until they moved in.
Right, so they didn't have to take the whole community. You were the whole community.
Yeah, this piece wasn't contested until Louis contested it in late, early 60s. And took it over.
Okay. Well, do I understand that you already had your land, then the government came in and put in escrow?
No, the government didn't put in escrow.
No,
escrow was done by a European. They just leased 80 acres from the state of Alaska. That was all.
It was just a lease?
Yeah.
And when did the lease expire, or was it...
Well, let's see, they kept it until about 70... Oh, about 75. It was about 15 years, 10 or 15 years they had it. And then they opened it up for sale, and there was quite a controversy over that, too, because they didn't publicly, the public land they're supposed to
wasn't
open.
A bid.
Right, and so instead they just sold it to Dennis Wise, and Dennis then turned it over to Mr. Barefoot, who was a preacher that wanted to put in an 18 year old and under juvenile delinquent camp.
Uh-huh.
And I reared up. I said, no way. And they'd already done it, see. Mm-hmm. And so I went to Anchorage and talked to the Lands Department down there and told them you haven't had, you don't have a public hearing, you haven't done this, 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 and this. And so they rescinded it, and then it didn't fly because too many people were opposed to it. And so they had them move the buildings off. And then whenever, that's the reason why Esro exists, is because when Bob and I built it, it was not, you know, a really good road. But when Esro came in, that was one of the stipulations. We would all give them our easement. There were seven people on the road by then. Mm-hmm. We would give them our easement if they upgraded our road. Oh, so correct. They spent a couple of $1 million on it and upgraded it. And Louis has a pit here on his field. He sold him the stuff to put on it.
Yeah, tell me again where his boundaries were, because I'm not sure.
Well, this is that whole piece right there.
Okay.
Yeah, he took that
getting
whole
these
piece of George
so
Fry's.
I can read them is...
So that he took Fry's.
Yeah, George Fry's. The whole thing of George Fry's.
Ruth, what needs to get stuck in here someplace is Esro is a European
space
and
research.
It's illegal. It's illegal for a foreigner to have a radio transmitter functional inside the boundary of the United States. This was a very special deal here that allowed them because they needed to be able to transmit to adjust the angle of the satellite stuff. And so it had national attention, actually.
Actually, it did, yeah.
Yeah.
And they spent a lot of money back there on it, you know. But anyway, we made... Reported back to the people that owned them. And so that way we kept our property and kept control of what went back there.
Right.
And so when Barefoot decided to put that thing in there, I told him, you don't have my easement. You know, I'm closing it to you. And I told him I'll close it from right here on.
Is that why the trespassing private road's still up
there? Yeah, because nobody has given their easements back there to... And actually, see, now GCI came in 1970 or 80, I think it was 80, time all this other stuff finished. The ground was went back to the state and they didn't do anything with it then. And then GCI wanted to put their satellite because their connection is right out on Badger Road, on the hill on Badger Road. And so we gave them the same contract. You maintain the road and pay us X amount of dollars a year for maintenance of the road, and we'll give you the easements that, you know, that are subject to, when you're done, they revert back to us. And so they pay us so much a year to use that road there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we put that money in a bank account, and it's all used on the road.
Mm-hmm.
It has been beneficial for us because we can control what goes in there, you know, and the money, you know, if it builds up, then I just turn around, like this last year, I just spent probably $14,000 on the road building it up and putting the surface on it again.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem we have is there's a lot of deadbeats on there that don't pay nothing. There's only seven people on the road that pays anything gets money for their easement. The rest of them wouldn't sign it. Let's see. Gary Newman owns this piece here now.
I was wondering where Gary is.
Okay, this 80?
Yeah.
Or no, you said this was a lot state of Alaska.
This 80 is
this
where
80
my sister had. Yeah, Parker's owned this.
Oh, okay, so it's
right
Newman.
Here. So Newman now owns
now.
It, yeah. And I almost said the name of the other guy, but I can't remember.
I'm trying
to
think. I know a woman that lives back there. And that's,
I can't, the name.
She's worked at the Denali Center as a recreation person.
Retalkative? Yeah, that's the one's name I'm trying to think of.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they live right here. They bought this piece of George Fry. Oh, no. Yeah, this piece of George Fry.
Okay, we'll come up with a name eventually.
Jensen.
Jensen, yes.
That little computer someplace.
Is it Jensen or Jansen?
Jensen.
With an A. Right.
J-A-N. Jensen. Yeah. He owns that 40, that 80 acres right there.
Right, here.
This piece here is owned by somebody else. They just sold it. The sister just sold it.
Yeah, I'm not sure that we need to worry.
But
this is information that's in the records if we want. Who owns it now?
in the escrow, like I said, now GCI owns, and that they don't own it. They just lease the property from the state.
Boy, this is an interesting piece here, this Art Along.
That belongs to a fella that didn't belong. It belongs now to a guy that works, he's a professor at the university, or works at the University Weathers, or University someplace. His name, I'll think of his name in a few minutes.
Who was it Colleen was asking her dad about up in there? He didn't know or didn't answer. Let me see how
it is. This is also interesting. Here, George bought this parcel, and he bought this parcel here. But how did he get there? Did he come off of Steele?
Well, when there was no trail in here other than the old Pinovich mine, like I told her. The old Pinovich mine is right here on the corner of our property. And the trail used to come like this here alongside Steele Creek and up here like this. Up until you get to Steele Creek. And it come across here at Don's place like this and down like that. That's how we first got into our piece of property. And then we cut. Then in 66, when they built the road in, when they upgraded our road, they took it straight on the quarter section.
And so then George was able to get into his land.
George, no, he never did come into there. George Fry's, they never came in. Both of these two were GIs. And in those days, GIs could homestead a piece of property, live on it 6 months out of 1 year, and it was theirs.
Oh, wow.
But when we came, if you were non-military, you had to live on it 6 months out of the year for 3 years. And they only had to do it for 1 year. Didn't have to clear any property. Nothing. We had to clear 40 acres.
And so did they ever put a home site on there? Nothing.
Oh, yeah, this one had a little log cabin on it. This one had nothing. Nothing was on there. This one had a little... this one had a... Keith Foster built a little cabin right over in the corner here. This one had nothing on it. I never did find anything on this one. This one had a little cabin on it that had a still on it. I'm not kidding you. It had a potato still. Somebody was making vodka out there. I don't know who it was. I don't know what happened to it, but the cabin is still there, but none of the stuff is. But when we first moved in there, this place, he never did live on it, never did clear any property, never did anything. Neither did this piece.
So he didn't prove
Louis
up Verdun. On it?
Well, yeah, he did prove up on it.
He was a GI that didn't have to.
They didn't have to.
Okay,
right.
Yeah.
They didn't have to. And so when we moved in then, there was no one living here, but the little cabin was there. And like I said, they used that little trail to get in, and the trail went right straight up to the cabin. None of these other pieces had anything on them. This one had nothing on them.
Was it a walking trail or a driving trail? Or was it people bringing in with horses?
It was if you happen to make it, you do.
A jeep trail, maybe, certain times of year, perhaps?
It was probably an old wagon trail. Mm-hmm. It was the old trail to the Pinovich, so it had two tracks, but what kind of tracks, I have no idea.
Well, George
we used our big truck to go in there.
Yeah, George Fry had another piece of property up here. I see.
That was, I never did find out if this was the same Fry or if it was
same
this
initial.
One dropped and this one.
Oh,
this
oh
one
wait
first
a minute. Look at this is Junior.
Well, so
is
this,
so that one. Yeah.
We never could figure that out. I went and checked at the land office and everything, you never could tell whether they were the same Fry or not.
So did you get to homestead your land?
Yeah, we homesteaded 160 acres.
Well, it was far enough back off the highway that no one had.
Yeah.
They could find easier access, I suppose, other places.
Oh, they could. We could have. We could have found lots different places. But this place just was beautiful. It was just real pretty back there in the valley, and it still is.
It's still beautiful
back there in the valley.
Did you know John Kalina?
No.
A little over far, and I'm wondering on Frank Fassler.
No,
Avenida.
Yeah, none of those. I did know Frank. Yes, we did. Yeah, Danny and them, we knew him.
Oh yeah, they were next door.
Yeah.
And the Brockmans were here when you came out.
Brockmans were there.
What about
Lindstrom's was there? Carl. Herning was here.
Yep. Oh, well, Herning's.
This was,
by then.
You know, like I said, the trail went on, but it was not a trail that you could go a Sunday drive on. It was pretty.
Were you a pretty social group out here in the early?
Well, yeah.
Did you have a community center or anything?
No.
Like a Grange?
We just had a homemakers club for the kids.
4-H.
And a 4-H homemakers club.
But that all came pretty much later.
A little later.
Because I think that happened after we came.
Well, no, it was in the 50s.
Yeah.
58.
Yeah. After 58. Yeah.
Did you have a church?
60.
No.
Well, close enough to town.
Yeah, all that stuff people went to town for. And you were too busy to do anything anyway. You picked sticks all day. You didn't go sit down under the shade tree. Because you had a certain period of time to prove up on those places. And you had to make hay while you could, because the winters came. And
what was it? Matty Lee was talking about Tilly Brockman.
Oh, yeah, Tilly.
And her, it sounded like she was saying Tilly had a couple planks she laid across the creek to drive her tractor across on. And I think we asked, well, did she leave them for other people? And said, well, sometimes.
Yeah. Sometimes she did. It just depended on her mood. She made the best beer, though, you ever tasted.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, she made good German beer. Her and her husband both. Her husband lived across the road.
Yeah.
She lived.
We've got him here. See, here's Henry. In fact, he apparently kept these three quarters, and she had
and she took the one. Yeah, they were quite a couple. They were interesting. Very interesting couple. Sweet as they could be, though, both of them.
Well, that's what Beatrice said, that she enjoyed Henry particularly. I think she saw more of Henry than of Tilly. Maybe.
Well, my husband saw more of Tilly. Him and Tilly got along really well. And my husband built, we built Amanita Drive that went into here.
Right in here,
For these people, Frank. And then we went on up, and then we built the one that goes up the hill to, where's the curve in the road? It's right in here someplace. Earl Herning.
Yeah, here's Earl. So it took off down here, maybe sort of like this old trail, I don't know.
McQuinn, but well, it's right here. McQuinn's place. This piece here, the trail, I think, goes right here. Anyway, we took off up here for a guy and went all the way up to just almost to this creek here.
Would that be more or less where Kalina's road is now?
Well, it's that road that goes up the hill.
Yeah.
It's a steep one that goes up the hill. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bob broke that road through in probably 65, 68, right. Something like that, for a guy that was homesteading over in here.
Huh. Down the other side of the hill.
Yeah, it was.
Mm-hmm. You don't remember his name, huh?
No, never did. Never did know his name.
In the 60s, people were getting back off the road quite a bit.
Yeah.
Well, we were told the road ended out here at Ackerman's.
Yeah, it did.
Beatrice was saying, well, their cabin is still there.
It is.
And is it now pretty well hidden and the road up?
Yeah, it's the first, there's two cabins there, the one that's right at the second curve there.
About,
it's 9 miles? Red and brown place. It's more like eight miles.
8 miles?
Yeah.
Well, I remember a little cabin set up above the road in the middle of a clearing.
Yeah.
And I can't see it anymore.
Maybe
if you walked up there,
you
could, but the trees have grown up.
Yeah, the trees have gotten really big.
Okay.
Yeah, it's still there.
So that was Ackerman's.
Actually, both Ackerman's houses are still there. The one that he built over by the curve, and then that little cabin that was out in the middle.
The one by the curve that is down on the present highway, where you can see it. Was that Cole's place?
But originally belonged to, all that originally belonged to Ackerman.
Okay,
Cole built.
That's, I wondered if that was maybe
the
same property.
And he built that probably in the 60s, in the 60s.
You like your coffee warm, don't
you? No, that's good.
You like it cold?
I do.
Nancy, coffee?
No, thanks. Well, since you had these four little kids, and I know that three little kids. Listen, girls, I've had four.
You're a good woman.
So you had the three kids, and you lived that far off the road, so surely Carl didn't come and get you.
No, we had to drive the kids out here.
Out to the road.
Out to the end of the road.
So you drove the kids out to the end of the road every day, did they walk back home at night, or you went out and picked them up again?
It depends. In the summertime, I'd let them walk. you know,
once the daylight came.
Well, did you have a vehicle at home while your husband was gone?
Mm-hmm. Not at first. We finally bought a Jeep, and then I had one.
That's what everyone had, pretty much. We didn't either, so the kids did walk.
Yeah, they walked. And I just taught them to look what to smell for and what to look for. Mm-hmm. You know, I told them to make a lot of noise as you come home. Right. And, 'cause, see, we couldn't get across this creek. See, this creek comes... Actually, this creek comes down in here.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a running creek, too. It's fed by some springs up in here. And we had to put a culvert in down here on this piece of property, right on the road,
mm-hmm.
on the right here. And I could drive from my house to here pretty good. And then until we got that bridge in, we couldn't, you know, drive. And so... And it was hard to drive. There's several areas there that was real low and muddy and what have you. In the summertime, it was a walk road. In the wintertime, it was a good road. We mm-hmm. could drive all the way because we would push this full of snow, the little creek full of snow there, and then just drive over the top mm-hmm. of it. So.
So what kind of animals were prevalent in the, when the kids were walking in the 50s? Did you have bears?
It was there. Yeah, lots of bears. Yeah. We shot about three back there that wouldn't leave my house alone. Yeah, no wolves. I never did see any wolves back there.
So it was bears, just bears and moose.
There was some, it's not a bobtail. It was a bobtail of some kind. Lynx. That's what it was. Lynx. There was a lot of lynx back there. And a lot of old bears, you know, that had been. This one we shot had a paw, short leg.
Mm-hmm.
He'd been shot
probably
two or three times in his lifetime. And mean or no. Mm-hmm. It was mean. It took, I think, Bob and my cousin about 15 shots to kill it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was an awful experience. I never wanted to see another bear as long as I live. But we still have bear back there. They come through every summer, mm-hmm. just about.
Did you have beaver on your creeks?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we would, down in this, down here on the Steel Creek. Let's see, where am I? Here. There's some ponds right in here. In this area right here, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of beaver right there. They'll dam up this and dam up this one. Yeah. They're still there. A lot of nice little beaver in there.
So did any of you people in the back there, did you trap?
I didn't. No, we never did. My husband wasn't a trapper. Mm-hmm. We never believed in shooting anything unless we was going to eat it. You know, even rabbits. Squirrels is the only thing I ever killed.
Yeah.
That I didn't eat because they were tearing my house to pieces.
Oh, so, yes.
Me and squirrels did not get
away. Right. When did Maranatha come in there?
Maranatha was a children's home.
Yeah,
here.
Right.
It was owned by the Maranatha group out of, I believe it was either Idaho or one of those places anyway. And they ran that for several years. So was this place
up
here.
It was still.
I see.
Boy, yeah. And then here's where Steel Creek comes in. So right in here.
This here was
the other.
This was another children's home. Right?
Yeah.
Davis's was mm-hmm. another children's home.
Were these orphans?
Yeah, this is where my kids went to kindergarten. Actually.
Oh, is that right?
Over here.
Huh. Yeah. Didn't know they had one.
So when it says children's home, these are orphans.
Yeah, these were kids who didn't have parents. And, yeah. Or parents were not unable to care for them.
Oriented.
Both of these were, yeah. Mm-hmm. Both of these.
Maranatha and Pentecostal.
This one was a little radical, but these people were really nice, really sweet. And like I said, my kids went to kindergarten. They had a kindergarten there because they couldn't take the kids into town mm-hmm. too much, and so mm-hmm. they established one there.
And these are local children that would end up here?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there were a number of Native kids over at Pentecostal.
Yeah. Actually,
both of them?
Yeah,
yeah,
both of these had a lot of Native children.
Mm-hmm.
And
they were coming in out of the village or out of the community
both.
Here?
Out of the village and the community, both. Yeah.
Did you have Natives out here, Alaska Natives out in
Hot
Springs?
Was
not that I know of.
And Pete Aiken was found with the only black family in the
mm-hmm.
area that I ever heard of.
Yeah.
Is Aiden in the military?
Well, I wondered if he was a GI.
Yeah.
No, Pete lived in, he was a photographer. And he moved up here years ago. Probably in, I think it was 49.
Hmm.
And
so he didn't come up here as a GI, huh?
Mm-mm. Not that I know of.
No.
That's a sad story. That whole family is has totally been wiped out except for one son, the youngest son.
Totally. He's a photographer because he worked later as a carpenter.
Yeah.
I'd never heard that he was a photographer.
Actually, he was a photographer by trade out of San Francisco.
Oh,
that's why his son went back to San Francisco.
Oh, well, that makes
sense. That's where he was from, sort of. But he's, I think he lives here now, but. Yeah. They were the first family we ever met up there out on Chino Hot Springs Road.
Yeah.
That's why we moved there, was because they let us park up there for that winter.
Yeah, you mentioned that. So when was it they built their house anyway?
Pete and them?
Yeah.
Well, it was built, well, no, it was just a little tiny house when I first.
Yeah,
they
doubled.
They didn't build it until it was in the 60s.
I was pretty sure that came out here.
It was in the 60s they built their house.
And then they doubled the size later on.
Well, they had a house there when we moved out there in 54.
Uh-huh. But it wasn't.
But it wasn't very big. It
was
a small little house, just a probably two rooms that I think of. And
well,
she only had the one boy when we moved there, and then she had Annette and Sparky later.
Were most of you young when you were out here, or were there some older people that? Had come out and had homesteaded, say, in their mid-years when their children were already gone, or most of you young?
Well, I think all of them were young, most of the people out there.
I guess the Brockmans were probably older than most.
Yeah,
that be right?
Maybe the Brockmans and, Pete and him were about 5 years older than us, 5 or 6 years.
Oh, yeah, but you were younger than most.
Yeah, we were. I was 20 when I had Patty, the last one. And we moved, I was 23 when we moved here, so not quite 23.
Did you know the Wortmans up on Amanita there? It would have been across from your aunt, he said, or close to that. Where are we here? Yeah, they must have taken over this, because I think Jim Day gave that up. I don't believe he ever... Well, I never completed anything on it.
I don't know. Carl Lindstrom was logging it. I just stuck my watch down in my pocket.
Oh, I didn't get too wet.
He was logging it.
I could be.
When we built the road into there.
Yeah, I think Lee Rissy was saying that Jim and other people, well, that Jim got it with the idea.
Of logging it. Yeah.
Of logging it, or at least he decided that's all he was going to do. He didn't want to.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't want to keep it.
Yeah.
So he must have bought from who? O'Neill? Or Bob McQuinn? Which?
Well, it wasn't McQuinn. McQuinn had his up until he sold the whole thing.
Right. Well, it must have been Bonet then, because that's about... See, here's Earl Herning. Well, this would be Alice Road now, I suppose.
Right. That's the one that goes to Rissy's, yeah.
So, well, it did then. Now it goes right through Rissy's Road.
Oh, his goes on the border section.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But that was a long story.
Yeah.
Lee, it was a good one.
So when you say they were they logging for logs for houses, or were they cutting wood and
log houses.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't care which one.
And where did the logs come for your house?
Off my place, right?
Off your place. They were pretty nice sized logs, if I recall.
We never got logs from any place but off our own place. We had, when we first started this road, and we were the only ones on it and maintaining it and everything. There was a guy come in here, and this piece that Al Smith had, he took it over from my cousin. It was the first time we had to go to court. and he homesteaded it just to do the logging, and he started, right after he filed on it, he started hauling logs, and like I said, we had built this little bridge over this here. And he was logging on this side of Ruby Creek. He didn't, you know, go on the other side of Ruby Creek. And
meaning the south side of Ruby Creek.
Yeah. The north side. North side. And he'd fill that truck to the hilt and drive over this little bridge that we had right here. And one day he broke it in. I kept telling him, look, if you're going to haul wood, you know, because he didn't maintain it. He didn't build it. He didn't do any of it. And so I said, if you're going to haul wood, cut those loads down because the bridge is not going to handle it. And so one day he went out and he broke the bridge in. So I took our big truck and right across the road. He come back in to get another load. And I told him, sorry, the road's closed. Can't do it. And he said, well, I can too. So he took us to court. Well, he lost, you know, because all he wanted was to haul wood. Anyway, then the next one that took us to court was Dennis Wise when he took over the Cesro site. He took us to court, and he lost, so. But, you know, because that road, you know, nobody, none of those people have ever put any money in it, you know, none of them. So, it, everybody says it's a sore spot with me. Well, yeah, if you've ever walked 5 miles down 2 miles of road, it'd be a sore spot with you, too. I told you,
roads are
my, my young years are in that road.
Know every pebble on that road. You know, their names,
the,
probably.
The, there was one mill that we can practically see from here that was Dave's, right?
Mill?
Mill.
Like logging mill.
Cut logs, cut lumber.
Nowadays,
you go beyond Domkey, go beyond Domkey and turn right and drop down in the flat there, and there was a mill in there.
If you say so, I don't remember.
Well, Ackerman had a mill.
Yeah, but that would have been farther out. That was around 8 miles.
I was trying to remember when it was closer.
Wasn't one of the Days killed in a mill accident? At least very severely injured.
Well, we've got to get a hold of Betty. She's in the phone book.
Sure about that.
Because she would know all this, but I don't remember.
Well, what I was trying to put together, Rissy said that the guy up by him was taking this little tractor that he had and dragging logs clear to the river.
Yeah, that was Scherer. And, he was right here below McQuinn. And he was the one that had a tractor, and he was dragging logs clear down to the Chena, not the little Chena, Lisa's.
But the big Chena.
So this perhaps was in the wintertime when he had crossed the little Chena. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember anything about Days. I think it's very possible, because obviously Jim Day did do some logging.
Yeah, he did do logging. All of them out there did logging because there was a lot of logs on their place, and they didn't need them.
Well,
and they needed to come off if they were going to do any kind of clearing and what have you. So,
and it was a source of income as far as selling the wood.
Yeah.
Because everybody was burning wood pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, in those days they had no choice.
To meet the government, you had to clear for the safety of the building, you had to clear a little bit because the winds had come along after you cleared enough for your cabin and start to blow down, and the blow down would start landing on the buildings and...
Yeah.
So you have to back up and start clearing tree lengths of reach.
My husband must have took that to heart because he cleared everything within 5 acres of my house.
And you have a pretty big field out there. We talked about the fact the moose was in your fenced-in garden area there, but what did you... You obviously cleared some of that land, unless
we cleared
meadow.
Probably 80 acres.
And what did you do with the land?
And we raised potatoes for...
That was potatoes field out there.
Probably 10 years. Yeah.
And I have, you know, do you remember when Jack Coghill was running for office, and he was saying, you know, what young people need today is to go out and glean potatoes, and he talked about, you know, he indicated sort of that it was here in Fairbanks that he used to, as a young boy, go out and earn some money to get potatoes. Did Jack Coghill glean potatoes on your land?
Not in mine. No. He might have in Bert Stemple's, but not in mine. No.
Well, Jack Coghill probably with me. He was older than you are, so he wouldn't have been gleaning on their land.
Yeah,
we
just
assumed he was talking as a
harvester. We just did our own. Did
you take him into one of the co-ops? Did you belong to one of the co-ops?
Yeah, we belonged to that root cellar.
Where Pete Aiken was. I gather from Lee that there was more than one co-op. Was the other one the Matanuska co-op?
The Matanuska, but it was for milk.
Because he mentioned the co-op.
And the vegetables. They had a refrigeration for vegetables.
Right. And stuff.
And we take our cabbage in there and carrots, cabbage and carrots. We raise potatoes, cabbage and carrots, and green beans. But the green beans I let them pick out of the field because it's too hard to pick. So I never took them in. But we sold to Fort Wainwright.
Everybody tried to sell to Fort Wainwright. That was a big market.
Did you have milk cows or chickens?
I did, yeah. I had a couple of milk cows.
For your own use?
Yeah,
for our
own use. I sold milk too, though. But
how many head did you have?
Just two. I just had two milkers, but I had four cows altogether.
Many head did Tilk run?
Oh, he at one time run probably 25 or 30. Yeah, he had quite a dairy going, much bigger than ours. You know, we never tried for dairy. I mean, it was not something my husband wanted to do. And the cows wouldn't let him milk them anyway. So it was left up to me.
I was going to say, how do you convince the cows of not letting
him? Well, I guess his hands were, he was too rough with them or something. But anyway, you could just see their poor old teeth go. You know, and hold that milk, and they would not let it go with him. I could go out there, and they were streaming by the time I said two words to them. I don't know how you do that. And I told him, well, it's just all in how you, pamper.
Was there farming in your background? Did you come from a farm? Did you learn this all after you got up here?
My husband was a type of person who, if he wanted to know something, he'd go get a book.
Mm-hmm.
He'd sit down, he'd read it, and he'd go do it. I mean, it was, he could retain whatever he sat down and read. And so he decided he wanted to do potatoes, and so that's what he did. And of course, we knew Bert Stemple, and Bert gave us a lot of pointers. And I worked for Bert for about 3 or 4 years before we started potatoes.
That's on his place or in his job? Because he was what, an ag inspector?
But not until about 5 years before he left is all.
Oh.
Before that, he never did anything but farm.
So what kind of work did you do for him?
Well, I was his field crew chief. I kind of oversaw the field and made sure that there was sacks and made sure there was other things. And then, I picked too.
Well, you must have known the Zozulas.
Oh, yeah. Ruth?
Well, that was her name. I couldn't think of it.
Ruth Zozula, yeah. In fact, I just saw her 2 weeks ago.
Because Lee was telling some stories on Bert about
some stories that just died. One time, I thought to myself, I'm going to get back at this man. Because he would come, he'd come out with the potato inspector. And I'd, make a cake or something. And one day I made this angel food cake. And the hole in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And that Bert Stemple sat there and flicked his ashes, cigar ashes, in the middle of this hole of this cake.
Oh.
I was furious, and I said, I'm going to get back at him if it's the last thing I do. So we shot this bear out there. And I took this bear's paw from about right here on. And I skinned it and laid it just about like that. In a piece of paper in a box, fixed the fingers, and it looked just like a human hand. I'm not kidding you, it really did. And I laid it in this box and salted it all down and everything so it wouldn't smell. I mean, really heavy. And then I put it in the mailbox and sent it to him. Well, I wasn't there when he got it out of the box, but a friend of ours was. And he said, Bert opened that and screamed, and threw it in the garbage. And he said, everybody in the building was going over looking to see what was in that box. But so I thought, okay, that's one. Now I've got about 50 to go. And so one time...